in North Central Indiana. It's the Insurgent Radio Network with Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, broadcasting live from the bunker in Warsaw, Indiana, right next to the Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where the elite meet to drink, sometimes eat. You can reach Tom at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. You can direct your letters and mail to Tom Metzger, the Insurgent, or just old plain box holder. Good old Tommy will get it.
Here's Tommy.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network calling, and this is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana, right next to that weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard. Well, we bring them in from all over the place. We just got a boatload of men from our friend Chavez down in Colombia. Yeah, how about that? We're ready to go. No, he's Venezuela, that's right. We got some tanks in from Colombia, yeah. So they're only available on the weekend, so bring your 18-wheelers up here and make your purchases and get them back home and hide them in the caves and, you know, underground, you know. You know the drill. How about that? We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Send your mail addressed to Tom Metzger or the Insurgent or just plain occupant. Make your checks for your dues for the radio show to Tom Metzger, Insurgent, or cash. And there you go. Go up to resist.com, and now the radio archives, after 2 weeks, this show will be in the archives. So their archives are free, but there's a 2-week lag time. And you can download hundreds of radio shows, and there's all kinds of stuff all over that website, books, tapes, CDs, you name it, it's up there. It's a beautiful day here in Indiana, rained last night, sun's out, beautiful, it's cool, it's in the 70s, and that's the kind of temperature I like. You know, I notice in the news they're pushing for every kid to be able to read by the age of 3. Well, it was back in the 50s. I would agree. But now the only reason the cynical bastards in Washington or your state capitals want any kid to read by the age of 3 is so they can pump him full of more Big Brother lies. Of course they want kids to be able to read at 3. They can pump them full of crap and get them ready to go out to war or to be wage slaves. So, but, you know, most of the people in the Midwest here are going to say, oh, isn't that nice? They really care about us. Yeah. Another thing I heard on the news today, they said, while there's an economic downturn, the immigration slows down. In fact, it has slowed down to about 6 to 9%. In the last couple of years, immigration. So it just shows you that probably sometimes you're better off being poorer than richer. You don't see many people immigrating to Mexico. But they say the key to the whole conversation was that they're thinking of supplying unemployment to invader immigrants. When things get bad like that. In other words, they can keep them in the country and keep them breeding and keep them working. That's quite interesting, isn't it? And also the point is made, and nobody ever seems to recognize this. They said that if we can't bring them in to do the work, that's going to inhibit growth. Growth, my friend, is your enemy. That's a capitalist term for more profits, and the shareholders make more money. But it doesn't do you any good because it eats up the environment and everything else. Growth is your enemy, especially when they want lots of growth producing crap that nobody needs and probably shouldn't even want. So whenever you hear them say, oh, growth is down, that's good. Whenever they say growth is up, that's bad. So everything related to it, you know. All the invaders coming in, oh, that helps growth. Uh-huh. That's a capitalist term, but most people don't understand that it's a negative. It's a bad term. So whenever you hear them say growth, say no way. I want not retardation, but pulling back. Yeah, not growth. That's almost like saying labor inflation. Yeah, why don't you look at it that way? Say labor inflation, where they need more people to do things that don't need to be done. Well, we've got a clip on here I'm going to try to play with an interview with Oliver Stone, that terrible, horrible left winger. Yeah, but anyhow, he's made a film about South America, and I think it's going to drive the Republicans crazy. So let's see what he has to say.
Oliver Stone is with us, the three-time Academy Award-winning director and screenwriter of numerous films, including Midnight Express, Platoon, Born on the 4th of July, and now his latest documentary, South of the Border. The website is southoftheborder.com. And Oliver Stone, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
You, sir, have created some brilliant movies and provided me with a lot of entertainment and thought-provoking times over my life. Tell us about South of the Border.
South of the Border was a road trip we took through South America. We had access to Hugo Chavez, said, come on down, talk to us, and we did. And he said, don't believe what I'm saying, go out there and see my neighbors. And then we went to six other countries, met seven other presidents. And they told us pretty much a story about change and reform, social reform, transformation in their region, and how the United States was threatening that, and they wanted their independence.
From what I see of the press stuff on this movie, Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, Evo Morales in Bolivia, Lula da Silva in Brazil, Cristina Kirchner in Argentina, Fernando Lugo in Paraguay, Rafael Correa in Ecuador, and Raul Castro, of all people, in Cuba.
Yeah.
You talked with all of these people, and you say, unfortunately, I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm really looking forward to it. But if the press, you know, releases and reviews them, you say that there's a revolution going on, or has already happened, and is continuing to go on in South America that's getting no press in the United States, and pretty much no press anywhere else in the world. What is that?
Well, I'll tell you, it is a strange story. It's a missile shield kind of a defense we have against hearing this, but it's been going on for 10 years. The economic facts and figures bear it out. The World Bank bears it out. These people, democratically elected, have taken control of their countries, democratically elected, and pushed for change, huge change. I wouldn't say revolution as much as a strong evolution. And they're all facing resistance from their local press. Their local press is worse than Fox News on steroids here. Their local press is small. It's owned by private people, television, right, attacking all the time. And that's the story you get outside. And the New York Times and all the so-called liberal media, Washington Post, have been some of the worst offenders against the truth in this matter. Not just the joke stations like Fox News, which, you know, completely distort the truth and make fun of it, but they keep doing it. But the point is, it's even seeped into Europe. Europe is more moderate. I'm going over there to England. We're going to open in 30 countries. I'm going to England and fight the good fight. You know, I think the truth will out eventually. And these people are all facing democratic elections, and they're always under pressure.
These countries, we're talking with Oliver Stone, his new movie, South of the Border, southoftheborder.com.
Is doc, that, yeah,
doc.
Know, it's confusing.
Yeah, thank you.
There's a lot of information there. But
yeah, southoftheborder.com. And arguably, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but give me a reality check here. Arguably, it seems that these South of the Border countries that have become, quote, socialist or democratic socialist, let's say,
right,
are not that different in terms of governance and fiscal policy, you know, basically taxing the rich and providing a social safety net for the poor, from Norway, Denmark, Sweden, from the Scandinavian countries. And yet, in the Scandinavian countries, you know, there is a right-wing press, but there's nothing like the kind of, you know, just incredibly brutal attacks that these so-called socialists in the southern hemisphere are getting.
Right.
Is that because in Scandinavia, the populace and the right-wingers and the power brokers have just basically given up, and they've said, okay, the people are with this, and we're not going to pick on it anymore, And in South America, they still think that there's a chance that they can pull off another coup. Like, I was actually in Venezuela the first time that they threw Hugo Chavez out back in more than a decade ago.
Right. Well, you're talking about completely different systems. I mean, the Scandinavia, the home of European experience since World War II, was, because they fell between Soviet Union communism and the United States capitalism, and they were looking for a middle ground. It's a whole different system in Scandinavia. You do have a left-wing press. You don't really have one in South America. It's privately owned. The governments of these countries are trying to get a public stations. They put them on the air. They have two public stations, TV stations in Venezuela out of 48. In Argentina, Kirchner has just tried to pass a law, but it's under appeal, called the media law, trying to break up the media monopolies. So that's a fact check. And number two, it isn't attached to a rich system. They're fighting to get the resources. They're all very rich countries with oil, gas, minerals. They're trying to get those resources, those profits, not going out to multinational corporations, but trying to get control of them for the profits of their own people.
Like Norway did with their oil.
I don't know the story of Norway, but
I believe so. Yeah. I believe that,
The oil in Venezuela, for example, was nationalized in the 70s, but a corrupt class, grew up around it, and they stole all the money. Now he's trying, and it's very difficult, by the way, to run a country. You don't do this by fiat. You take over, and you do it democratically, and you fall all along the way. But basically, corruption is a big problem in every single country. I'm not going to deny that Venezuela, Argentina, they all have huge problems because of the tradition of corruption going back to Spanish colonialism.
Yeah, well, we have a corruption problem here.
Yeah, we sure do. But we should look to Latin America because the Argentina economy, the Venezuelan economy, they do have solutions for us where we can move. We are moving anyway into a semi-socialist situation in the United States. You can feel it all. You feel it the way the government's moving and putting money into too big to fail stuff. So I think there is we should be talking with our neighbors and learning together on how to deal with these situations.
I was in Argentina in 2000 and it was falling apart.
Yes. And you know who saved the situation? Was the Kirchner people.
Yeah.
They came in and they reverted the International Monetary Fund, which is also featured in the film. I hope you mentioned that. They have been a very negative influence for the last 20 years in South America since Reagan. And now they got rid of them. Most of the $20 billion in loans became $1 billion in loans through the years. Right. Kirchner said no to the IMF, kicked them out. So did Lula in Brazil. And this is a big victory.
To what extent is Hugo Chavez's idiosyncratic personality, his multi-hour TV rants, statements before the UN. To what extent is that something that actually plays well with his base in his country, or is that just him being a little weird? I mean,
take on that cartoon
character that we see of him.
Well, it's the nature of, he doesn't have, his argument would be, look, I have to get on the public airways because I can never get any time on the private media. They're always attacking. So it is partly defensive and over-defensive, absolutely. And then number two, his style is definitely macho, and it does offend, I think. I keep saying to people, I think if you look like Woody Allen or Salvador Allende, he'd be much more acceptable in the United States. The fact is that he's a blunt man, and he's an ex-soldier, and he seems like a tough guy. And he is tough, but he's completely democratic. The third thing, I just correct one little thing you said. Noam Chomsky wrote very beautifully about it. And those people who were at the United Nations that day who saw him speak, he had the longest applause of any international leader when he came to the podium.
Oh, yeah.
That is to say, he was the most respected. The way the American press pictured this, he's a buffoon, a clown. It's an amazing turnaround of the truth.
A quick question. One of our callers earlier, I mentioned you were going to be on the program, and one of our callers said, the phrase the beast is a recurring theme in many of your movies.
Which is?
This concept of the beast, the kind of belly of society.
That was a terminology I used in Nixon, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, the beast, I forgot where it came from, my imagination, I read about it. The beast is something, a mechanism inside our system. Call it capitalism, call it social control, call it fear, where it drives this country constantly and turns over, and no one can get in its way, whether it's a president or a filmmaker or another country. It seems to be a self-perpetuating mechanism that it devours and is extremely violent.
Yeah. We're talking with Oliver Stone, the filmmaker, and his new documentary, SouthOfTheBorder.com. Oliver Stone, I wish you very best.
Well, what do you think of that? Well, there you go. That'll drive the right wing up the wall. Yeah, there's a lot of things. You see, everything that happens, everything that the corporations have transnational corporations and the International Monetary Fund do in South America directly affects the invasion of illegal aliens into this country. So with the NATPA and all that kind of stuff, that has caused big problems in South America, and so the people are reacting to it. So they call them socialists. If they thought that would work, if that wouldn't work, they'd call them Nazis, I guess. But it's very interesting to us to see what's happening in South America. This film, which is, what did I say, South of the Border, and if you want to go up and get the trailers on it off the Internet, you go to South of the Border Doc, D-O-C, at .com. Yeah, that's sort of a tongue twister there. South of the Border, DOC.com. And they got a big website up there, Oliver Stone. Now, this film supposedly came out on June the 25th. I haven't seen anything about it, and I know it'll never be played in this small town where I'm at because the Republicans have such a strong stranglehold on everything here that the theater wouldn't dare play it. So I'll have to probably wait till it's on TV or go drive 50 miles to see the film. But like I say, what we're interested in is anything that destabilizes South America helps destabilize the United States through massive immigration, people fleeing the predatory capitalists that are operating in South America. Remember that. So that's our connection to the left. And any honest connections to the left is fine with me.
Lights on the highway out into the night, voices in my head going round. Just turn left at the corner where I always make a right. Leaving this town and leaving tonight. Leaving town.
That I think is a piece of intelligence information that won't affect hardly anybody, but you should know it, that the bad boys, the famous but incompetent people, are up to their old tricks again, and who knows who they're going to stop or drag in next.
You know, this is a call on behalf of my friend Kevin. Kevin has been complaining about Trump in his own area for the last couple of months, a specific woman that he was going to file charges against. She openly tried to entrap him with all kinds of illegal stuff. She's related to a whole bunch of top conservatives and other zot takes. Anyway, I just got a phone call from him about an hour ago at 10:26 a.m. West Coast time. That would be 1:26 p.m. His area on the East Coast. Anyway, he was pulled over and had a check run on him, and he expects to be arrested in connection with the Mahan twins, even though he hasn't seen those guys in 6.5 years. The goddamn RICO Act is going to be used against anybody that even knows Mahan. Mahan is back in his home area, his home dungeon, and he just finished his birthday with his brother, as you know. Anyway, I'm at the same phone number. That's all the information I have. But you better watch your ass on fucking RICO and Tangleman, too. You've been real careful. But this fucking African fucking nigger communist, he's going to use every dirty trick in the book to make every honest white man just sit down on their knees and think. Take care.
Well, there you go, for what it's worth. Another person of interest being evidently harassed and who knows what. Well, now we've got an apologist on there that's going to tell you about how there's really, you know, the racism is gone. It's all fine. Go back to sleep and all that kind of stuff. And he's written a book. So let me play. I didn't get the whole interview. Let me play a little of it for you. Now, this is totally Republican stuff. Totally Republican propaganda.
Is there imperative to perpetuate the idea that America is still a racist, institutionally racist nation? Whites are still out to oppress them. So, and that's the reason that you're seeing a lot of the racial tension right now. And it seems as though the race issue has even gotten worse since our post-racial president came in. And that is because we've got 40 years of these career black activists, politicians, the press, the entertainment industry, telling black Americans that, you know, the first thing that white men think of when they get out of bed is how they're going to screw over the black man, and that they can't get ahead.
I wish that was true.
It's propaganda and it's lies, but it has worked, as we can see. There is no reason for a Black Panther Party now. I mean, you haven't done anything to take them off, but this is that, you know, some of them believe it. Some of them are just out for power. Nevertheless, they've been diligent about it, and they've won those hearts and minds.
The name of the book, Negrophilia from Slave Block to Pedestal, America's Racial Obsession. Eric Rush here on the Rusty Humphrey Show. I learned something the other day. We had that whistleblower on, the one that blew the whistle on the Justice Department.
Yeah.
He told me that they couldn't have picnics because the word picnic. You have you heard of that one?
I I did not hear that. No.
Yeah, do you know why they couldn't have picnics in the Justice Department?
Let me guess. They would have had to serve watermelon?
No. Even better. There's a rumor, and I looked it up because I couldn't believe it. There's a rumor that white people back in the day that came up with the word picnic because they'd go and they'd pick up black guy, which is where the picnic, right? That's where they got that. And then they'd have music, and then they'd hang him. They'd beat him up and hang him, and they'd have music and food. And that's where they came up with the word picnic. Now, none of that's true. The word picnic, kind of, you know, they find it in the 1600s out of France.
Right.
It doesn't matter. This is the Justice Department. It's a good rumor. Hey, it makes us feel more like we're victims, so let's not have picnics.
Yeah, that's pretty twisted. But then, as you said, it's an Alice in Wonderland Justice Department administration.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is the sort of freakishness that people are buying into. I mean, white Americans have been exposed to so much guilt that a lot of them have gotten into the habit of not talking because it's not worth the aggravation of getting hit with all of this invective. But a lot of this stuff that even Obama says, and then Holder with his "We're a Nation of Cowards" remark. I mean, if you stop and you really think about it, you have to sort of shake your head because, you know, as my experience, and I'm sure yours is too, that in the past 40 years, you know, most Americans are at the point where they really are just making their judgments based on the content of people's character, and race doesn't figure into a whole lot anymore. And
it's
really just these politicians, career activists, and the people who they've influenced with all of this propaganda, for whom race is everything.
Right. I got to take a quick break. Can you hold on? Eric Rush is my guest. When we come back, I want to ask, are we a racist nation, number one? And what are some of the things in the book that you as a black guy even surprised you, like the picnic thing? That freaked me out. I never Latino, Asian, or a cracker. Welcome, welcome. Christian, Jew, infidel, Muslim, atheist, it doesn't matter. You are welcome with open arms.
Well, there's another Negro, a freaking American, that's climbed into the Republican black section. They know where their bread's buttered now. There's no easier way to make money than to jump into the Republican cause if you're black, because they desperately need blacks. Yeah, so he's written a book, and he's stolen my favorite word. Negrophilia. You know that. You've heard it on my show hundreds of times over the years, that the white people of this country are involved in negrophilia. Yeah, that's right. They are. So anyhow, that's that. Well, I see that seedy little Jew Roman Polanski's been set free by the Swiss. I wonder how much that cost Polanski. They're rejecting the U.S. extradition request. I don't think that extradition request was... I think it was a little more tongue-in-cheek than anything else, don't you? Well, he'll probably get his somewhere along the line. Those Jews like to have sex with those 13-year-old girls. Well, the Talmud says they can do it at 3 years old, so actually he was 10 years late. Oh, yes, I want to recommend another film that, you know me, I'm a film buff. And I'd seen this film back a ways, but I'd forgotten about it. And the name of the film is King of California. And it's interesting. It's extremely interesting because you guys that get down in the dumps all the time and feel like... you're never going to make it and all that kind of stuff. You should watch this movie about the undying spirit of a man who's on a quest and then nothing's going to stand in his way. Yeah, it's called King of California. It should be available in almost any video store. Gee, I've only got 129 pieces of email. Things are slacking off a little bit. Well, here's a little response I did to, I think, a newspaper article by a local paper here. The answer is quite simple. It's not the border bandits or the illegals that are the problem. They're simply the effect of what the federal government wants. Hundreds of trucks each day cross that border. And it's simply business. Big business is willing to allow almost anything to go on as long as they can get their money. Any attempt to clean it up by private forces at this time would result in an immediate, ruthless federal move against those trying to clean it up. There are perhaps hundreds of federal agents all along that border watching for any signs of direct action to take place. So the timing is bad for those who can easily clean it up, and they're forced to keep their powder dry to fight another day. Any suicide missions would be just that, suicide missions. Nothing can be done as long as the empire is still fairly strong, but it's deteriorating. It will be tested on when the chemistry is right, and the wise will then move. But in the meantime, they're making too much money on that border. They've got to keep it open for the drugs. They got to keep it open for the cheap labor. They got to keep it open for hundreds and maybe thousands of trucks bringing agriculture and manufactured goods in from south of the border that could very well be grown here and manufactured here. That's what it's all about. So if the border bandits shoot it up a little bit, that's the price of doing business, man. Here's an interesting editorial from Haaretz, which is the big Jew paper out of Tel Aviv. There's a letter circulated by three rabbis in South Tel Aviv in which they direct residents not to rent their apartments to migrants, which are niggers and refugees trying to settle in the city, makes a pretense of concern for the welfare of the residents and the compassion for asylum seekers. But it hardly manages to conceal the blatant racism lurking between the lines. The rabbis warn residents not to give access to their homes to illegal workers, but it is clear that maintaining the rule of law is not their concern, inasmuch as they are not demanding similar treatment for Israeli citizens. As for the argument that the presence of foreigners is causing a rise in crime and intermarriage, the rabbis are even taking the law into their own hands and bypassing City Hall and the police. Yeah, the weaker population groups living in South Tel Aviv find themselves pressed to take in refugees, migrant workers, and collaborators. This situation creates troubling friction that aggravates the residents' sense of unfair treatment and alienation. It's hard to ask the inhabitants of these deprived neighborhoods to take in outcasts of the world with open arms without feeling threatened. In this complex reality, the role of religious and secular leaders is to try to bridge the gaps and find creative ways of living together. Yeah. The rabbis who signed the letter are not civil servants. However, the public is greatly influenced by their opinions. The Tel Aviv municipality has expended more than a little effort in taking care of migrant workers and could have used the rabbi's help in making contact with migrants and their leaders and attempting to integrate the newcomers into the neighborhood in ways that would have been done in many other countries. The rabbis, however, prefer to exploit residents' fears and inflame emotions in the name of Halakha, Jewish religious war, or law. Over the weekend, a courageous leader, Rabbi Yehuda Amital, who founded the Maimad political movement, passed away. His party carried the banner of tolerance, humanism, and the search for peace in the name of religious faith. And though the members of his movement were always a minority, they provided an important alternative to the ultra-Orthodox nationalist radicalization. In recent years, Rabbi Amital's students and followers have fallen silent, and the status of rabbi, such as those who wrote the letter about the migrants, has grown stronger. It can be hoped that the municipality will understand the damage they're doing and will publicly disassociate the city from their questionable activities, and instead of provide the option of an alternative, one of coexistence, diversity, for all the city's residents, both temporary and permanent. A coexistence free of fear and racism. Yeah. Well, you knew we were right, and we knew we were right. Listen to this. King Tut's DNA is Western European. Despite the refusal of the Secretary General of the Egyptian Supreme Council of Antiquities, Zahul Hawass, to release any DNA results which might indicate the racial ancestry of Pharaoh Tutankhamun, the leaked results reveal King Tut's DNA is a 99.6% match with Western European Y chromosomes. How do you like that? The DNA results test results were inadvertently revealed on a Discovery Channel TV documentary filmed with Hawass's permission. But it seems as if the Egyptian failed to spot the giveaway part of the documentary which revealed the test results. Hawass previously announced that he would not release the racial DNA results of the Egyptian mummies, obviously because he feared the consequences of such revelation. On the Discovery Channel broadcast, which can be seen on Discovery Channel website here, or if they pull it on YouTube here at approximately 1:53 into video, the camera pans over a printout of the DNA test results from King Tut. So anyhow, they got it all. It's right on here. We'll put it on our NAV. So, see, that gives you more and more positive proof. White people, Aryans, traveled and built great empires all over North Africa and, of course, Egypt. And, of course, the real question is, where did we come from? Yeah. And don't give me that Jesus stuff either. Well, let's see what our friend Jooms got to say today. I drove into a nearby town yesterday to take care of some business. What I saw made the hair on my neck stand up. Entering an Albertsons, one of a grocery store chain for the upper class of America, I found the store almost deserted. And this was midday during the middle of the week, when it should have been packed with spoiled housewives buying overpriced name-brand items and arguing with the butcher over some cut of filet mignon. Nobody. The hum of packed frozen food shelves was all that could be heard. That and my own footsteps as I walked into the store in stark amazement. So much food. So much fancy stuff. The best of the best, the cream of America's food industry. The butcher shop was something out of Norman Rockwell's painting, picture perfect. The display case was full of Alaskan king crab legs, fresh trout from Maine, salmon from Alaska. New York and porterhouse steaks sat in regal elegance, looking smugly down at lowly chuck steak. The sheer arrogance of the place really hit me. The produce section was packed with the finest and rarest fruits and vegetables from around the world. And everything was double the price it should have been anywhere else. But the patrons of this store didn't care about that. Shopping here is a statement to the other snobs of how much money you have to waste. If you have to worry about price, you don't belong here. Ghetto blacks and wetbacks are discouraged from shopping here, or even entering the store for that matter. A stern-looking security guard saw to that, and the lowlifes tried all the same. The rich have some subtle ways of discouraging them, methods learned through long centuries of dealing with the lower classes. I once saw a guard turn back two baggy-panted bucks who obviously didn't have a dime between them and were trying to get in just to lift something. Swarthy wetbacks and their herd of screaming wetlets never even try because the prices alone keep them out. It's only the thieves that keep trying. Today was different, really different. I had gone there because their indoor pharmacy possessed a rare medication I needed, and high-priced or not, I needed it now. When I got to the counter, I was greeted like a long-lost friend. It was downright embarrassing. I was waiting on by no less than three seasoned pharmacists who fell all over themselves to fill my order and cater to my every whim. Here was a well-dressed white guy. Lordy, lordy, I'm not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm not broke either. But you'd never catch me shopping here in normal times, but times aren't normal. I was the only person in the pharmacy. They all turned out to fill my prescriptions, and one even wrote her home phone number on a business card and gave it to me, telling me to call day or night if I needed anything. They wanted my business bad. I could see now what was going on, and my suspicions were concerned. Yeah, confirmed, I mean. They were going broke. It would only be a matter of time, and not much of that before this store was just another ghost in a rapidly dying mall that once housed nail salons, beauty parlors, optometrists, and a whole range of satellite industries that are now drying up all over the country. Nobody has any money left. And these pharmacists would soon join the ranks of the unemployed, with their homes still unpaid for and their kids still in high-priced Ivy League schools. There was fear and panic in their eyes as they waited on me. They, too, knew what was coming, and they were desperately trying to keep a grip on their old lifestyle. I felt sorry for them. I could smell their fear. I got my meds and left, walking past the endless rows of ice cream, frozen treats, and other high-priced items. It felt for all the world like I was the last man on earth, and I was looking at what man had left when he vanished suddenly, like one of those old science fiction movies. As I left the store, two baggy panted blacks that stank and looked like they'd been pulled from a sewer pipe entered the store. The guard didn't stop them this time. Instead, he looked the other way. He knew why they were here. Like crows picking over a corpse, the feeding had begun. I knew that the next time I drove past this store, it would be gone, just like the American dream. Dead and gone, destroyed by corruption and evil in high places, and the ignorance of a spoiled, apathetic public that was too busy enjoying themselves to stop the walls from crumbling. So be it. After leaving there, I went to the doctor's office for an appointment, only to discover that my usual physician no longer worked there. No reason was given when I asked, other than he had left the firm. As I waited to be seen by his replacement, I overheard the nurses talking to each other in low tones. The good doctor had just lost everything in the stock market recently and checked out permanently. A lifetime's work and saving for retirement gone in an instant as the Jews on Wall Street finished their feeding on the corpse of our economy. All our money is now overseas, where it will finance the fall of the remaining Anglo nations of the world. And the cycle continues, and nowhere is retribution being paid to those fiends as they laugh and smoke Cuban cigars behind the doors of power. And when the chaos hits, they'll fly in their Learjets to Israel, Rome, and Paris, far away from the carnage that they created. Driving home, I noticed hungry cops hiding around every bush and corner, desperately trying to find excuses to ticket the hell out of passing motorists because their bosses are riding their butts to bring in more revenue. More and more and more. And if you are unfortunate enough to get a ticket from one of these vampires, you can forget about contesting it because, innocent or not, you're going to pay. They know that it'll cost you more to fight them than just pay the fine. So they're now violating everybody's rights and demanding a fat fine anyway. Or you go to jail. The freeway traffic was sparse, even at midday, which is unheard of on Interstate 10, and the city streets were empty as well, with vacant parking lots everywhere. On the way home, I picked up a paper, and it was filled with the most insane bargains and sales you ever saw. People and businesses are all desperate for money. We're selling everything for 20 cents on the dollar. I saw a row of fat, jet-black crows as I pulled into my driveway. Eyeing me with sinister red eyes, one of them cawed raucously at me, daring me to throw a rock at him. He knew that I'd miss at this distance, and then he'd heckle me from the safety of his perch. I don't like crows. They remind me of flying niggers. In the Dark Ages, they would eat the eyes out of people being crucified while they were still alive. But like them or not, we're all going to see a lot of crows, both the flying and the two-legged type, very soon now, as the feeding frenzy begins. Sometimes I envy the dead. They'll never have to see their beloved land in its death throes as we will, and they'll never experience the nightmare of things to come. Thank you, June.
Well, I've never lost a nickel, though I'd never want a dime. Until that gypsy woman said your stars are in line. Today is the day, boy, Lady Luck, she's with you. Take all that you got now, here's just what you do. Let it ride, let it ride. Put it all on the table, let it ride. So I thumbed my way to Reno, I was just 24. That sign said casino, so I walked on through the door. That man hollered, hey boy, do you want to try my game? I said, that's why I came here, $10, do my name. Let it ride, let it ride, let it ride. Put it all on the table, let it ride. I put my money on the table, gave those dice a toss. Seven come 11, not once was there a loss. They all gathered round me, watched with dismay, as I won my fortune like the gypsy said that day. Let it ride, let it ride, let it ride. Put it all on the table, let it ride. Something in the stars that I'll never know. That gypsy woman told me all those years ago. Well, I left that casino, put my money away. Now I've always lived a good life, never worked another day. Let it ride, let it ride, let it ride. Put it all on the table, let it ride. I'm a lucky man.
Well, since this is Moon's Day and we're just kicking off the week here, we need a little humor. You know, all work and no play makes Terrible Tommy a boring boy. How about this? Barack Obama met the Queen of England. I don't know whether you've heard this joke or not, but I'm going to do it anyhow. He asked her, Your Majesty, how do you run such an efficient government? Are there any tips you can give me? Well, said the Queen, the most important thing is to surround yourself with intelligent people. Obama frowned and then asked, But how do I know the people around me are really, really intelligent? Yeah. The Queen took a sip of tea. Well, that's easy. You just ask them to answer an intelligent riddle. The Queen pushed a button on her intercom. Please send Tony Blair in here, would you? Tony Blair walked into the room and said, Yes, my queen. The queen smiled and said, Answer me this, please, Tony. Your mother and father have a child. It is not your brother. It's not your sister. Who is it? Without pausing for a moment, Tony Blair answered, That would be me. Yes, very good, said the queen. Obama went back home to ask Joe Biden the same question. Joe, answer me this. Answer this for me. Your mother and your father have a child. It's not your brother, and it's not your sister. Who is it? Well, I'm not sure, said Biden. Let me get back to you on that one. He went to his advisors and asked every one, but none could give him the answer. Finally, he ended up in the men's room and recognized Colin Powell's shoes in the next stall. Biden asked Powell, Colin, can you answer me this? Your mother and your father have a child. It's not your brother. It's not your sister. Who is it? Colin Powell yelled back, That's easy. It's me. Biden smiled and said, Thanks. Then he went back to speak to Obama. Say, I did some research and I have the answer to that riddle. It's Colin Powell. Obama got up, stomped over to Biden, and angrily yelled in his face, No, you idiot, it's Tony Blair. Well, we got another tip here from Lone Wolf Blood and Soil. TT, I just conquered the night for the fourth new moon in a row. I cannot overemphasize how experience matters. This time I wore a jungle hat while out doing night work. Knowing that many air conditioners would be masking my own noises, I chose to wait till after 3 p.m. Sure enough, there are plenty of air conditioners on that were making plenty of background noises. In fact, dogs didn't start barking at me until I was regressing from my successful night work. And that only happened because my regression was on a cement and now had gravel and sand on it. Unexpected. The jungle hat amplified by own sounds from my body and by feet, so I could hear them unusually well. While on missions, I only carry two keys, if at all. Those two keys are a house key and my auto key. Sometimes I hide my keys in my auto, but tonight I did not. When I do carry my two keys, I usually lay them in my pockets, such that no noises occur when walking about. But tonight I absentmindedly laid them in my pockets such that they made noises, which were picked up by the brim of the jungle hat and bounced into my ears. It has already become habit-forming for me to wipe my shoes off when coming onto a hard surface to walk on. But I hadn't worn a jungle hat before on a night mission. What a difference. Again, I chose to work after 3 p.m., when it's very quiet and the dogs tend to hear and bark at any noises due to no wind and setting up of inversion layers in the atmosphere. But due to the season, the dogs did not hear me walking around until I aired and walked on cement that previously, on other missions, had no gravel or sand on it. However, under such good conditions, my wearing a jungle hat unexpectedly caused me to become acutely aware of my own noises, which was different than I was expecting. BTWTT, I filled my auto with gasoline from a 5-gallon plastic gas can at the start of the night mission, like usual at night. But this time the two different noises from the funnel and the auto fill tube started sounding like music. What this means is that I can now easily distinguish the difference in the amount of liquid in each. This is my fourth lunar month of filling my vehicles exclusively from gas cans. There you go. He's out there practicing, so he's ready. Are you ready? Yeah. We'll put out the information. You better think about it.
On the toilet lid. Go see, go. How you functioning? I don't know, but I'm too old for this running around. Give me a call when you come back down. At the go see to the store. Turn my back for just a second. She sucked all of the nitrous out of the cream cans in the dairy section. She gets pulled over. Go see, go. How you function? I don't know, but I'm
over and she ain't no fun. No see, go see, no, how you function, I don't know. But I like you more when you're living in sin. So give me a call when you're high again. Give me a call when you're high again. Give me a call when you're high again.
That's it for today, boys and girls. Moon's Day on the 12th of July, 2010. Righto. We'll be back with you tomorrow on Tears Day, and I think we're going to have another big shoe from down under from the boys in Australia. So tune in tomorrow, and we'll hit you with another one. 14-5, 14-5.